So that's basically the key to all of life. I don't think I need to repeat that part because it was all... So we're talking about the topic of Nekima Nekira, one of many topics that we could talk about in Parshas Kedoshim. The Torah tells us, connected with perhaps the more famous clause, the Ahav L'Rech Kamocha, which is very much of a theme with Losita and Belosita, that we're prohibited to take revenge and we're prohibited to bear a grudge. So you use such terminology, you talk about taking revenge and bearing a grudge, so the image that it conveys, you have somebody going on a hunt to hunt down people who have wronged him, putting on a mask, taking up arms, going and hunting down people. And the truth is, the picture that the Gemara presents is much more prosaic, is much more mundane. The Gemara says, what do we mean when we're talking about Nekima? What do we define as revenge? Not the whole dramatic deathwish picture that you have, but we're talking about somebody, Reuven lives next door to Shimon, and Reuven asks Shimon, can I borrow your coffee maker? And Shimon says, no, I'm not interested in lending you my coffee maker. Then the next day, it's Shimon who needs something. So Shimon comes and says, can I borrow your MP3 player? And Reuven says, what are you, nuts? Yesterday I wanted to borrow from you, you didn't give me. You think I'm going to lend you now? No way. That's the comma. That's what we're talking about. That's revenge. What's Natira? What does it mean if you're bearing a grudge? Plus, take the same story. Well, it's not exactly presented in the same way in the Gemara, which might be significant. We'll take the same story and twist it a little bit. Reuven wants to borrow the coffee maker from Shimon. Shimon says no. Then Shimon goes back and wants to borrow the MP3 player from Reuven. Reuven says, yeah, okay. I'll lend you the MP3 player. Because I'm not a jerk like some people. I'm a nice guy. I'm not like you, who didn't give me the time of day. I could be a decent human being. So if you have to talk like that, if you can't resist mentioning that, so that's a violation of Natira. And in fact, the Gemara seems to actually distinguish that. It seems, at least from the way the Gemara has it in the Masechta Yuma, that this is only applicable in these types of monetary offenses. And it's not really offense, it's a lack of helping out. These types of passive monetary offenses is where it applies. And if it was a more personal problem, if it was a tzaira de gufa, so then the Gemara says the prohibition apparently doesn't apply. Even though the Gemara says that we still recommend that you not keep score, and the Gemara says that kol ha-mavir al-midosav mochlun lo al-kolavonosav, that whoever is able to forgive, so he is forgiven himself for everything that he does. And the idea of mavir al-midosav, Rashi explains in Masechus Rosh Hashanah what that expression means, that a midah is a measurement. So the person who's keeping score, the person who's keeping track of everything that ever happened to him, that's when he wants to exact revenge. So who's ever able to be mavir on that, whoever can skip over all that, can forget about this whole list of where he keeps all the measurements, so then mochlun lo al-kolavonosav, that's a big segula, and that's a very powerful point. That we show that we understand the midah of forgiveness, because Baruch Hu can treat us with that quality as well. The Gemara says it may also be a little bit different if a person is a Talmud Chacham. If a person is a Talmud Chacham, so then there does need to be some response, because the Kavodat Torah requires it. And the Gemara has a very unusual expression. It says, "Kol Talmud Chacham she'eino nokin v'nota kinachas she'eino Talmud Chacham." But if a Talmud Chacham is not ready to be nokin v'nota, take revenge and to bear the memory of it like a snake, so then he's not worthy of the name. That's a very surprising idea. So many, many Mefarshim all have the same understanding, that the idea of the comparison to a snake doesn't mean to convey viciousness, but it means to evoke the fact that just like a snake, so the Kalala from Parshas Bereishis is that the snake eats dirt. He doesn't get any hanah from what he eats. He doesn't have any enjoyment from what he's doing. So too, if a person feels he has to stand up for Kavodat Torah, so then that's one thing, but it has to be so sincere, there can't be any personal benefit in it whatsoever. It can't be any appreciation, just like the snake doesn't get any enjoyment from his food. I think Rabbi Yonasan Eichitz took it a step further. He said that we know that if a snake bites, and a poisonous snake bites a person, so then it becomes weakened. It loses energy. And so too, if the Talmud Chacham is going to have to stand on his honor, maybe for the sake of the Torah it has to be, but it's going to leave him not only not happy, it's going to leave him weakened. It's going to leave him unhappy. It's interesting to note the Or Sameach quotes this Gemara in a strange context. To the point that he's making in the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah, he quotes this Gemara, where he basically makes the point that there are some things that the Torah can't spell out specifically as far as the chiyuv. We're getting into the whole discussion of what's the obligation of Talmud Torah. Is the obligation to be learning all day and all night? Is the obligation to be learning just a little bit? Kriyas Shema Shachar Tzva'avis. So the question there is, so why would the Gemara and the Torah give you different impressions as far as it's a little bit, it's a lot? What's the idea? So he writes there that sometimes the Torah has a certain vision of what we can strive for, but it can't phrase that as an obligation because not everybody's able to live up to that. So therefore it has to phrase it in the minimalist way in order to leave room for varieties among people. So to here, since we see that at certain times different people have different sets of rules, different people is a different type of scenario, so therefore there needs to be a minimalist language in the Torah. So Yosef Mech quotes this Gemara, this idea of no kevinote kenachash, as one of the examples. So this again is different than what we would have pictured. This is not the imagery of revenge and of grudge bearing that you may have from reading the Pasuk. And indeed, it's interesting to note that the Sefer on the Rambam is written by the title of the Sefer is the Yad HaKetana. And the Yad HaKetana notes that it's a little surprising to say that the Torah is against revenge. We do find revenge in the Torah. We find the concept of a Goel Hadan. It's a little bit relevant to what you're talking about, that a relative who avenges the inadvertent murder of his relative. We find, for example, there's an idea of Kefel, that if somebody steals something and he's caught with it, not only does he have to pay it back, he doesn't only have to make restitution, he has to give twice as much. It's punitive. It's gain revenge. So sometimes we do find it, and sometimes we don't find it. So what's the story? So the Yad HaKetana suggests, and we'll see that this is very consistent with what the Rambam writes, that's really the whole point, that there are things which are very serious and very actionable, and therefore we have a justice system to take care of them. So if somebody kills somebody, that's a serious thing. If somebody steals your car, it's a serious thing. So therefore we have a justice system to take care of it. And that's to show you that there is a threshold, that there are certain things that we've decided are actionable and they're serious and those are to be dealt with. And things that fall below that, that's not the case. Things that fall below that, so we can't let that occupy us. And the Rambam talks a little bit about why this is. The Rambam seems to say that the whole world could turn into the Hatfields and the McCoys, that basically if people are going to try to keep a cheshbon for every little thing that happens, every little offense, everything that's going to bother them, they're going to try to make a payback for, and you're going to lose track of who started what, and what's about this, and what's about that, and years later you're still each one paying back each other, so the whole world falls apart. The whole world's not going to be able to function. In order for us to have a happy life, in order for us to have a world, so we have to decide, okay, here's where we draw the line. These are the things that we take care of, and things that are below that, so we don't keep track of, did you give me your lawnmower, did you give me your coffee maker? We don't keep track of those things. And if we do, then it creates a big build-up, and it creates a problem, and everything falls apart. In fact, the Rambam has a surprising statement there, which Rav Yosef Engel doesn't list. We've mentioned many times in the past Rav Yosef Engel's list about mitzvos that are there to protect other mitzvos, shiag d'oraisa. So here he has one of these examples. He says that he doesn't list this example, but others list this, that the Rambam says that why does the Torah prohibit netira? This idea that you're not allowed to bear a grudge. So really the idea is that we're really concerned about netima. That's the problem. Netima is what makes the world fall apart. Everybody exacting a price for whatever happened to them. So presumably, if people forget about it, they're not going to be driven to revenge. It's only because they remember what they're worried about, remember what they've endured, that they then move from there to taking revenge. So if we were to cut it off by point of the tear, if we're going to say that you can't bear a grudge, so then we're going to stop you from, we're going to be able to stop you from the kima. Instead, they would have saw Salanta had an eitzah for people. He said that if you want to be able to get past what people have done to you, so he's assuming that mechila, which is a whole discussion in the Achronim, he's assuming that mechila for transgressions, that when people have hurt you and you're supposed to mechil them, he assumes that it works like a monetary debt. So what would happen if somebody would owe you $10, let's say, and you go up to the person and you say, I'm mechil you. So he doesn't have to pay the $10. So you're going to come back a month later and say, you know what, I do need the $10. I'm going to take it back. You can't do that. Once you were mochel, so you released the chos, and now you have no merit to get it back. You have no claim to get the money back. So this was long to assume that it should work the same way here, that as soon as you get offended, you should mochel right away. Once you're mochel, it's too late. You can't take it back. You can't be unmochel. It's like a monetary debt, and then you won't have any opportunity to let it build up into more serious resentment. So that's how the Rambam understands that the problem of Netira is that it could lead itself to a Nekima, and therefore you shouldn't bear a grudge, you shouldn't come to take revenge. There are those who suggested, and it's not that this is really recommended, but there are some who thought that maybe if that was the case, maybe it would have an afkamina, that maybe if somebody was no longer living, let's say, you know, you're not going to be able to take any revenge on them, so then maybe it would be mutter to be noter. Maybe in a situation where you know there's not going to be any potential for taking revenge, maybe Natira is mutter. It's hard to imagine, it's still recommended, but maybe if you want to take that type of literal understanding, that it's really just a concern and may lead to the other thing, so then maybe that might have some basis to it. But if you do follow this theory of the Rambam, but that's the idea, that just we don't want people killing each other over minor offenses, so then we shouldn't really distinguish between monetary issues and personal issues. This distinction that the Gemara has, that it's only these monetary lack of assistances that make the list, and personal offenses are apparently mutter as far as the Kima Netira. So according to the Rambam's logic, it doesn't make sense to distinguish. And the interesting thing is the Rambam doesn't distinguish. He doesn't have this distinction. And it's a question, why not? So it makes sense based on his philosophy. It makes sense based on his explanation of why it is. But textually it's a little difficult. So some suggest, some point out that there may be a different gersa in the Gemara in Yuma. Okay, instead of distinguishing between monetary offenses and personal offenses, it may be the distinction really between milei da'ara and milei da'shmaya, between things that happen in this world and things that represent the kavod shamayim. So you should only worry about avenging heaven's honor, but not about personal honor. And there's a sefra like that also. The Medrash also has that text. Rambam has this gersa. So it could be that that's the Rambam's text, and maybe the Rambam Paskin like a Medrash against this Gemara, or had a different reading of the Gemara, so maybe there is textual support for it also. And within the Rambam's understanding, we could also see the rational support for it, why it would be that he would take a different stance. And with him on this is the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch also doesn't have the distinction. And the Sefer Achinuch has his own rationale. He has his own reason why it is that we have this prohibition. And he explains, he says, that whatever happens in this world, there's some reason. Either it's a kapara, or it's a nishayon, or it's really better for you. There's something that you're supposed to learn from it, whether it's your personal tshuva, whether it's your personal growth, or whether it's to realize how you're being pushed in a better path. Whatever it is, there's some divine reason why you're going through what you're going through. So to be focused on, well, it's all because of what he did to me. To be focused on the guy who's the aggressor, you see him as the perpetrator, when really he's the shaliach. It's a very philosophical approach. So Sefer Achinuch said that means you're going to miss the whole point. You're not going to have the spiritual growth you're supposed to have because you're too focused on why it is that this is being done to you by this guy instead of why it's being done at all. I thought based on this, you could explain a pasuk, I believe, in the Parshas Bechukosai, a pasuk in the Tochcha. Very difficult pasuk that the Mefarshim have a very hard time with, and I think we might be able to explain based on this. The pasuk says, in the context of the Tochacha, something like V'naftem v'ein rodeh lo, that it says you're gonna be chased, you're gonna be running, they'll be running away, and there won't be anybody chasing after them. I remember I was in Cambie Avenue during the first Gulf War, and Rashi was giving a shiur on Shabbos afternoon, actually. And at that time, during the Gulf War, every other day or more than once a day, there'd be a siren, and everyone would have to run to the sealed rooms. So in the middle of the shiur, we heard a siren, and everyone started to get up, and then somehow we realized that it was a motorcycle outside screeching, and it sounded like an alarm, and it wasn't an alarm. But Rashi decided to talk about it. You know, are you going to run away? And there's nobody chasing you. There isn't really anybody there. So the problem with the pasuk is that it's very hard to understand why that's bad. I would think that's better than if I had a choice between running away and having somebody chasing me or running away and not having anybody chasing me. I think I would much rather have nobody chasing me. So what kind of a telepatha is that? So the Mefarshim have a very hard time with this. They suggest that maybe it just means that we have an idea, Elokim Mevakesh HaSanirdof, that God tries to help out the person who's being chased. So it means here you're not even going to have that merit, you're not going to have the victim status. And I think that maybe you could suggest, based on the chinuch, that what it means is that very often people can endure the same types of tragedies, the same types of losses, Rahman al-Fan, as others, but people who see a human messenger, so they're able to direct all their anger at the human messenger, and if he could get put in jail or if something could happen to him, they feel vindicated, they feel like, you know, it was taken care of. And other things happen, we call an act of God, and there's no human being they could blame it on. So you don't have that outlet. They don't have the ability to put the guy in jail or to take him to court or to do whatever it is. And those people, they have to confront more directly, okay, this is between me and God. I have to figure out what it is. And the truth is really both people are going through whatever they're going through because God wants it. But the first group feels that, okay, I can blame it on that guy and I can put him in jail. I can do whatever it is. That's going to take care of my problem. So especially in the context of the Tovah, because Baruch Hu is saying, you're going to suffer, and you're not going to be able to blame it on anybody. You're not going to be able to say it's because he's chasing me, because he made me run. It's going to be clear that it's between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what it's about. So that's essentially what the Sefer HaChinuch is saying, that's always the case. We don't always perceive it as being the case. And to focus too much on the messenger, that's going to be a distraction from what's really going on. So the Sefer HaChinuch as well doesn't have the distinction either, both the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam. Prohibit Nekima Natira for across the board. And it doesn't matter whether it's Sari Degufa or Sari Demamona, they don't have any type of distinction. But a lot of other Rishonim do. A lot of other Rishonim do adopt the language of the Gemara, prominently the Sefer Yireim and others. Some of the Moni HaMitzvos do have this distinction. The Chafetz Chaim writes in his Sefer Chafetz Chaim that essentially what it is, so then it's Machlokas Rishonim, whether you adopt the Gersh of the Gemara or not. And since it's a matter of Anisha Daraisa, so essentially it's a Sveka Daraisa, and therefore we have to be Machmer. So we have to assume against the Gemara, like the Sefra, we have to assume that Nekim Natir is also across the board. Others thought that maybe the Rambam and the Chinuch don't have the distinction because maybe in Echanami, it's maybe Mutter, but there's no need to recommend it. There's no need for it to put in their codes that this is behavior to emulate, because even if we don't have to prohibit it, don't have to go out of our way to say it, maybe that's why it's not in Yisrael. But this is a very prominent opinion on the matter of the Chofetz Chaim statement, that it's essentially a Sveka D'Oraisa, and that it should be Machmir, like the Chinuch, and like the Rambam. So those who do have the distinction, so what's this distinction based on? So again, it's surprising that this issue should be focused on such a narrow type of situation. So the Sefer Yireim explains why. He says that the idea is that look at the context. So we have Florecha Kamocha. The context is this is the Torah telling us that we're supposed to do chasadim, that we're supposed to do acts of kindness to each other. That's what we're all about. So you might think, if that's the case, so then maybe we sometimes have an idea that you have to be Osa Maisa Amcha, that we only apply these halachas to people who are following in the path of the values of the nation. So if somebody is not going to lend me his property, so maybe he's not an Osa Maisa Amcha, so maybe I don't have to lend him property. Maybe you don't have to treat him with chesed if he's not treating me with chesed. So essentially, the chiddush says that's not true. That the chiyuv of chesed applies despite the fact that the person to whom you're going to be doing a chesed, and halva, lending property, lending money, is considered to be a fundamental act of chesed. If you look in the Sefer Avos Chesed, you look in the Rechav Tzchayim Sefer on Chesed, a huge part of the Sefer is devoted to that. When we talk about chesed, we think often of Hachnasas Arachim, Bikecholim, Nichamavim, and things like that. A large part of Avos Chesed is focused on lending. Lending property, lending money is considered to be a huge chesed. It's like a gemach, is a loan institute. So this is a fundamental thing that we're supposed to be doing. And if we're not, so then we can't say that just because somebody else is not doing that, therefore we're going to hold back the chesed from them. And that might be understanding as well, and that could explain why the Gemara focuses specifically on that. There's another understanding that the Yerushalmi has in the Sechus Nedarim, if you're doing Daf Yomi, I don't know if you did all the Yerushalmis, but it's the Nedarim. So the Yerushalmi there has a statement that for a Jew to take revenge against another Jew, so what's that comparable to? Is it, let's say somebody accidentally hits his head with his hand. So is he going to decide that now I got to take revenge on my hand? My hand hit my head, so now I got to have payback. I got to now hurt my hand. So nobody would do that. They would realize that their hand and their head are both connected to their body. And to act out against the hand is not going to be the most productive thing. So too, understanding that all the Jewish people form one unit, and we're all essentially one body, we realize that it doesn't make sense to take revenge, and that's indeed what the pasuk ends with. We have to l'reicha kamocha, the other half of the pasuk, you realize that their needs are your needs, and therefore it's not going to make any sense to go on a war of vengeance to try to extract payback for what one part of the body did to the other part of the body. So that would also seem to go with the whole Rambam Chinuch type of view. It doesn't say explicitly. It's possible the Rambam doesn't pass on like the Baba Nebuchadnezzar. I don't know if we know that explicitly. But it does seem to go fit more within that perspective. So there is some discussion. Why do we need just to also mention one test case, whether you take the understanding like the Urayim or like the Chinuch. The Paras Yosef on Chumash quotes in the Sefer Shifsei Tzadik the following question. Let's say you have two people who ask you for a loan or to borrow something. One of them didn't lend you something yesterday, and the other one is not involved with any past problems. So should we say that there's an inyan to davka give to the person who didn't lend you? Or should he get an edge just because he didn't lend you? So it's a strange idea, but we do find the Gemara has a famous halacha in Bava Metzia relating to the principle of Te'inu Prika, that you have an obligation to help somebody out with their luggage on their animal. They're having a hard time loading the animal, unloading the animal. So the Gemara says that the mitzvah of the sonar, if you have somebody who you don't get along with, so you should dafka try to help him. He should be the priority, because kidei loko fesitzro, that we want to try to counteract this idea of the fact that they're not getting along. So that's the case, so therefore the irony is the guy who you like less is the person who should be prioritized. So should we say that here also? It's an interesting discussion some Sfarim have, that maybe if you have a choice between giving to somebody you have no problem with or giving to somebody who dafka didn't lend you, maybe that's an idea in light of this whole spirit. But there's another topic that they talk about which is related to this question. Let's say in your apartment complex you have very thin walls. So you hear Reuven come to Shimon and say, Shimon, can I borrow something? Can I borrow a DVD player? And Shimon says, no way, get out of here. I'm not lending my stuff to nobody. And he kicks him out of the house. And you just hear that through your walls. And then the next day, Shimon comes to you. And Shimon says, listen, I need to borrow a flashlight. Will you lend me your flashlight? So you know, you heard from all this, the same guy who wouldn't lend his neighbor stuff. So what if you decide that you don't want to lend him because he's not the kind of guy who lends other people's stuff? So that depends. So if you want to take the chinuch Rambam view that it's about paying back people who did wrong to you, so then you can say, listen, this is not anybody who did anything wrong to me. I'm not keeping score here. I just get the impression that he's not a person deserving of chesed. But if the idea is like the Urayim, that the point is that we give chasadim to people regardless of how they are worthy of it, their own personal behavior. So the fact that we may not have been the victim doesn't necessarily matter. That may still create a requirement to chesed anyway. So there is a lot of discussion as to why we need a prohibition of Netira. And it sounds like that you can't violate Nikima without Netira. That you first have the grudge in mind and then you act on it. So it seems like that includes Netira. So why do I need both prohibitions? I should just say Lo Sika Omen, and then I'll include it. I can't have Netira as well. So there are a couple of possible suggestions. Some suggest that it may depend on an intent. That maybe you could, because it's also interesting, it seems to suggest that it's worse to, if I refuse to lend you property because you didn't lend me, that's a prohibition. But if I refuse to lend you property because I'm just a jerk, because I'm just not a nice guy, so that's okay. Because it becomes worse if I have a good reason to do it. So that's hard to believe. Some of us say, the Stipo has a comment like this, he says it's not true. He says if that was your attitude, then you're also, that's also Netira, which is a chiddush. Apparently you can violate Nikima, you can violate Nikima without having had an offense done to you. But if you're doing something out of spite, you're doing something out of nastiness, that's also the intent of the Torah, which is a chiddush. But let's say you have a situation where you're not going to give it back out of, not out of anger, but it's out of, you know, you have a policy that I'll lend to people who lend me, but I'm not going to lend to people who don't lend me. So then maybe that's still a problem. So that's the debate. There are those who thought that that wasn't a problem, and there are those who thought that that's still a problem. So then the question of how Netira factors in, maybe in theory it is possible to have Nikima without having Netira. And that was a whole discussion of itself. It's a related question as to whether there is a need to actually express the Netira out loud. You're only in violation of the Netira if you actually say it, or are you in violation of the Netira even if you think it in your mind, if you're keeping the grudge, and saying it is just a way of knowing that you're thinking it. It sounds like from Rashi in the Gemara and Yuma, that it's really the issue is that you're thinking about it. That you note their believo, that you keep it in your heart, and you are storing this in your mind, that itself is part of that itself is the nature of the issue. So it's not really the saying it, it's really the thinking it. Rav Kook has, in one of his farim, he has basically the opposite of the Rambam. He says that really, the real problem is Netira. That really we don't want you to keep around the grudge forever. That's actually the worst part. But Nikima is what strengthens Netira. The fact that you could act on it is what strengthens the grudge in your heart. So therefore we prohibit Nikima so it shouldn't come to Netira, which is the opposite of the Rambam. But you do find that attitude again in the Parsha. That there's also say that the unexpressed is sometimes worse than the expressed. That when the Pasuk says, well, shnishnas aficha bilvavecha, you shouldn't hate your brother in your heart. Gemara already sounds like it's davka bilvavecha, that if you're going to keep it in, you're not going to say anything. That's when it becomes worse. And then that's why there the pasuk is coupled with hafeach tochiach, that you should say what's on your mind. If you're not going to say, you're just going to keep it in your heart, then that makes it worse. So that's how Rav Kook understands it. Really, it's all about the mentality, and the actions are bad because they could strengthen that mentality. Oh, for sure, you shouldn't say it in public.
Right.
Well, but that's what the pasuk does. The same pasuk, about Lo Shishnas Rechicha, does say Hocheach Tochiach. That if somebody has done something wrong, so you are, in a non-embarrassing way, supposed to explain to them, that's where the Gemara has that clause, Lo Shishnas Rechicha, to the rest of the pasuk, so the Gemara, that you have to do it in a way that's not going to be embarrassing. But presuming you could do that, you have an obligation of rebuke. And some of the Rishonim understand that it's specifically in the Ben Adam L'Chavero context. The guy has hurt you, so you shouldn't keep it to yourself and hate him forever without saying anything. Rather, you should say, listen, I'm a little upset about what happened. Can we talk about it? And can we get past it? And then move from that to, don't bear a grudge. Don't keep it going forever. Rather, you have to rest.
I'm giving this to you despite the fact that
right, she's saying that's just being aggressive, basically saying, I'm better than you. Right. Correct, that is worse, and that's a specific issue. So the question is, though, is it worse or is it the same thing? Because it could be that even if you don't say it, but if you think it, that might be the issue. That's what this discussion is about. And maybe there are those who say that even the Gemara doesn't mean necessarily only because you say it. The Gemara means the fact that you're thinking of it is already the problem, and we use the speech as a way of knowing. Correct. Right. So then that gets into the whole attitude also, where the question is, and this goes back to the Rambam, that sometimes you have midos issues, which clearly we're working towards a certain midah, but we know that we need actions in order to affect the midah, so therefore we have actions that are defined, even though really we're looking to address the personality trait that's underneath it.
So sorry, I would assume better to lend that other item
than to not lend it in them. Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Right, so nobody would say not to. No one would say not to lend it. The question is.
Lending it, you'd be over
on the
call.
Right.
But
right.
Lending it, you could be over on the street
floor. Right. So you could be over on the street floor, certainly if you say something nasty. And the question is, you have to just say it, or even if you're just thinking about it, is that also enough? So now, what I'm trying to think about, and the question is, do we have enough time to throw in another subtopic, another short Kedoshim topic? Actually, about 12 minutes. Actually, I was thinking maybe about also talking a little bit about Dam L'chas Chos. It's also on the Parsha. It's also a shorter topic. The Torah says also, B'sedek Tishpot Es HaMishacha. You have an obligation to judge people favorably. It's a question if that's really connected to that pasuk. This pasuk, B'sedek Tishpot Es HaMishacha, has a number of interpretations throughout Chazal. Each one applies to a different sphere of society. On one hand, it could apply to judges. That's how some Gemaras understand it, that you're not supposed to listen to one side without listening to the other side. So the Sadek Tishvot Es HaMishacha. The other side is that, the other angle is that it could apply to potential judges. It's a mitzvah to be done. The Sadek Tishvot Es HaMishacha, if you see people who need judging, you should be able to step in and judge them. And the other possibility is that it's not talking to judges or potential judges, it's talking to basic people, that Davidan is called Adam Lachaschas, you should judge everybody favorably. So the question is, how do you do that? It's a little bit harder when we talk about controlling your thoughts again. What exactly does that mean? So first of all, it's a question when it applies. It doesn't seem that it applies in every circumstance. And if you see somebody who is known to be a tzaddik, somebody, the Chofetz Chaim and before him Rabbeinu Yonah both lay out in their svarim all the different categories of how you treat this concept. So let's say if you have somebody who's known to be a tzaddik and who's always done the right thing, and you see him doing something that could be 50-50, it could go either way. So does Dam L'chas Chos apply in that circumstance? So it actually doesn't. That's not a Dam L'chas Chos case, because that's simple mathematics. If the guy has always been a tzaddik and he's doing something, that can go either way. So he deserves his reputation. He deserves a Cheskos Kashrus. And you don't need a principle of Dam L'chas Chos to tell you that he deserves the benefit of the doubt. The Gemara goes even further than that. The Gemara says that if you see a Talmud Chacham who did an Avera, you know it's an Avera. So still the next day, he says, Al Tahar Acher, but you only shouldn't think badly of him the next day, because you should assume that he's done Tshuva. Gemara says, Sem Asa Tshuva, maybe he did Tshuva. The Gemara says, Sem Asa Tshuva, Allah Vada Asa Tshuva, don't think maybe he did Tshuva, he definitely did Tshuva. And the cynical interpretation that they say about that Gemara is, Vada Asa Tshuva, the Talmud Chacham for sure wrote a Tshuva saying it was Mutter. He definitely wrote himself a Tshuva allowing it. But the literal interpretation is that he definitely repented, because you can assume that Talmud Chacham, the person, is always thinking about what he's doing, is always revisiting, is always doing tshuva. So therefore, even if you know what he did was wrong, you can assume that some time has passed that he's not involved in that anymore. But as far as interpreting actions that we don't know, so if the person is righteous and the activity could go either way, so then it's not right to think anything else. It's really for the in-between cases where you don't really know. You have kind of nothing to really tilt you one way or the other. So then, Dam L'chas Chos says you should give the presumption of innocence and the presumption of righteousness. If somebody is not a savory character and is engaged in behavior that looks bad, so then there's no obligation of Dam L'chas Chos. So the question is, and this is where there's Machlokas Rishonim, so the question is basically, what would the Chofetz Chaim do? Let's say there's no obligation of Dam L'chas Chos, but would you say that there's still a Midas Chasidus, that if you were really a saintly person, so you'll do the mental gymnastics to try to make it work? And we say, no, there's no obligation, and it's not right. This is not a situation for Dan Lachaslos. So that was the machlokas we showed him, and it could really depend on the question of why do you have the obligation of Dan Lachaslos? What's it really about? So is it about what it sounds like? Most people would probably guess on the surface, but it's an idea. If, again, you have to reach a kamosa, that you would want people would give you the benefit of the doubt, and that's how society is going to be harmonious, if people trust each other, and if people aren't assuming the worst about each other, they're not being close to each other all the time. So if that's necessary for society to flow, so then that sounds like a v'haflarecha kamocha idea. It's a ben adam l'chaver, people should give each other the benefit of the doubt, because people are always suspecting each other, it's going to be, again, a very bad situation. So that's one possibility. But there's another idea that Mariel Diskin has in his chulis, that it's not really about the ben adam l'chavero, that it's essentially a ben adam l'atzmo, that people believe that they should rise to the standard of the people around them. So people are going to try to be good people if they know that everyone around them is also trying to be a good person. But if they believe, you know, everybody does it, that everybody is adhering to a lower standard, that nobody's really trying to be noble and to be respectable, so they're not going to try either. So therefore, for your own good, you should believe that people around you in general are trying to adhere to a higher standard, and then you'll feel motivated to do that as well. So this could affect this question. So if it's about trying to keep society harmonious, so then you could say that no matter what, if you're able to pull off the mental gymnastics, you're able to convince yourself that everything is good, so then that still has a value to it. But if the idea is that you're worried about your own standards, so it means that you want to have a belief that the average person is decent, the average person is doing the right thing. But the people who you already know are the part of society that you don't think you should be imitating, so then to tell yourself that what they're doing is right is actually going to be counterproductive. That's going to lead you to imitating negative behavior, and that's understandably not exactly what we're looking for. So this question, essentially, whether it's a ben adam l'chavero or not, could affect a number of questions. You know, for example, if a person is not alive anymore, like the situation with the human material, if the person doesn't care, say, guys, I don't care what you think about me, it doesn't bother me at all, so then it's not a ben adam l'chavero apparently, but it still may be a ben adam l'atmo, and it may not be his right not to care, because he has to worry also about social standards. Could also affect the question of what if it's not an issue of propriety, it's not an issue of morality. Let's say you invite somebody to your house, and he says, I'm sorry, I can't make it, I have another commitment. And you think to yourself, well, he probably could make it, he just doesn't like me. So it's not really an avera, it's not really a question of morality, but it's not the kind of thing that's going to make you get along with him too well. So if it's about society getting along, so then maybe Dan L'Chaskos applies there also. And maybe you should tell yourself, no, he's right, he couldn't make it, he'd love to come. But if the idea is that it's about social standards, then it just doesn't really enter into the equation unless it's a matter of moral issues or religious issues or something like that. So these are some of the issues that come up on that point. It's interesting to note that many, many Mefarshim have the same idea. Second point tonight, we're saying that many, many Mefarshim hit on their own. But the Mishnah that says in Pirkei Avos, Havidanis kol ha'adam l'chatzos. So it doesn't say Havidanis kol ha'adam, it doesn't say judge everybody, it says judge all of the person. So many, many Mefarshim all hit on the same idea, that there are times when people are doing things and there isn't any other way to read it. It's clearly wrong what they're doing. There's no other way to look at it. But it still doesn't mean that you should judge them badly, because you should be done as kol ha'adam, you look at the whole person together. And if you know everything, if you were able to see all the different parts, so then you see why, take it in context, this is not meant to give the person a bad impression. The Lubavitcher Rebbe noted that the Mishnah says, you should make for yourself a Rebbe, and you should buy a friend, whatever that means, and you should be down l'chaskos. The whole context of the Mishnah is to make the point that we recognize that people are really a product of their educational background, and they're a product of their social background, and that has a huge impact on who they are. So when you're judging people, you should take into account who is their Rebbe, who are their friends, well, how did that play a role in how they got to where they are, and have that in mind when you're done as kol ha'adam. And therefore, to that extent, the Nelson Gishtetner has a couple of shuvas, whether you're Matayim, Dam Lachatzos, if you believe that somebody did something wrong, if you believe he did it at the Shogeg, if you believe he did it in Hidei Tshuva, all of these different twists that could happen, that's also a part of the idea of Dam Lachatzos, of factoring in the overall judgment of the person, which is a similar concept here, towards trying to keep society harmonious, and as well as trying to keep your own values high and secure. Okay, so we'll stop there. Next week we'll talk about something else, and I should have a week of positive judgments, and have a Shabbos.